So welcome to another exciting episode of Bloomberg Intelligence Tech Disruptors podcast. My name is Jonathan Palmer, and I'm a healthcare analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence, the in-house research arm of Bloomberg. We're very excited to have Dr. Oliver Karas, the CEO and one of the founders of ZocDoc, joining us here today. If you're not familiar with ZocDoc, it's a healthcare technology platform for patients to book in-person and virtual care. Welcome, Oliver. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you, Jonathan. Good to be here.
Well, you know, I want to start maybe in this discussion just, you know, when I did some research about you, you know, one of the first things that comes up is a deep family history of healthcare. So maybe just talk about your background and how you came into the industry at large before we dive into maybe ZocDoc.
Yeah, happy to. So as you can hear from my accent, I grew up in Germany, but my actual roots are even further away in the Middle East. You know, my dad grew up in Iran, and he was a social activist in his youth. Unfortunately, he got captured by the Secret Service back then, and they tortured him, including breaking one of his vertebrae so that a bone splinter went into his spinal cord, paralyzing both of his arms. He went to Germany to get treatment. The doctors there told him he had 6 more months to live, and so he decided to stay in Germany. Why die on the way home? And so he raised us with this idea that we should be active, you know, that we should continue as activism and that talent brings responsibility. I first channeled that into medicine and becoming a doctor, but and following his footsteps and those of his you know, fathers, I have to say, back was a more conservative environment, but ultimately I decided that I wanted to have more structural impact.
That's fascinating. And you know, this isn't actually, ZocDoc isn't actually the first company that you started, if I'm correct.
That's right. So I was on my own after high school, so I needed to make some money, and I started a pre-internet online company back in the day when emails took 5 days to get from Munich to Los Angeles, simply to make money. I didn't know much about business back then, but I realized that the internet was coming and that I had two choices. I could drop out of college and sort of make this company internet ready, or I can sell it now before everyone sees the internet coming. So I decided to sell the company in the early 90s, which was obviously a great decision because it protected me from too much money too early on in life. I made some money, and I took that to go through med school.
That's great. And then when you got done with med school, you went to McKinsey. Was that a natural progression? Did you want to go back and be a clinician or a researcher from you know, after doing your schooling?
So I finished med school. I did my residency. I actually did some research, but I also realized that there are maybe at least two different types of people, the ones that really enjoy getting better and better in one thing, and the ones that get all their energy from solving new problems and ambiguity. And if you're in that second bucket, the worst thing you can do is be a doctor, because no patient wants to hear their doctor say, well, this is super interesting. I've never seen a case like this before.
And so, you know, along that same vein, I guess McKinsey probably presented a lot of those opportunities for problem solving. You know, where was your focus during your time there? What sort of engagements did you do, and what really resonated with you?
So I did a broad spectrum of engagements, but because I had this dual background of being, you know, someone who could code and knew their way around computers and a doctor, I actually ended up doing a lot of healthcare technology work. So I worked with provide organizations, with payers, with governments to help them make the healthcare system more efficient through technology. And I ended up enjoying that a lot and stayed at McKinsey a lot longer than I had originally anticipated.
And so I imagine that must have led to the aha moment or the light bulb going off in your head to found ZocDoc. When did that moment occur, and did it look like what we see now?
Well, so it's interesting because I decided that I had to leave McKinsey after they promoted me to junior partner. And I realized they were starting to put the golden handcuffs on me. And if I didn't start another company soon, I would never do it. So I actually started screening ideas. And there were a couple of factors that were really important to me. One, I wanted it to be a great mission, right? Talent brings responsibility, and I wanted to put whatever talent I have to do something that's really important. The second is that I wanted it to be a large market. Now, that's easy in healthcare. Everything is a large market. The third is that I wanted it to have a strong moat. So if you put yourself out there and you fight to win in your market, that you actually have something that you can defend in the long run. And then, you know, my last factor was I wanted it to be based on a contrarian insight, because I believe that, you know, all the best ideas are and the most lasting companies are based on that, because it gives you enough time to actually build build out your moat before others come after you.
So what was the contrarian idea that was the genesis of ZocDoc?
Yeah, so back in the day and still, you know, to this day, you have to wait a really long time to see a doctor, right? On average, back then it was 18 days. Now it's 26 days from the time that a patient picks up the phone and starts dialing for doctors until they actually see one, right? And back then, the general explanation for that was that there's a shortage of doctors, right? And of course, when there's a shortage, then, you know, you need to wait. And our contrarian insight was that, no, doctors have last-minute cancellations, they have no-shows, they have reschedules, right? This is just a problem of matching supply and demand. Mm-hmm. And then we looked at what's happening in other industries, right, where these matching problems occur and where you have perishable inventory, whether that's, you know, hotels or flights. There are marketplaces that solve that mm-hmm. problem, and we want to start that marketplace for healthcare.
And so was that the original pitch that you took to venture capital? I mean, I've historically heard that the word marketplace is one of the bright red flags, or not red flags, white flags that get them interested. Was a marketplace idea the one that you pitched originally?
So we did pitch the marketplace idea, and I think venture capitalists generally like the idea. We still had a very hard time raising our very first round. And for the longest time, we didn't even know why that was. You know, people politely listened to our pitches, and then we would never hear from them again, or after a while, sort of get gently turned down. And we were starting to ask ourselves whether we're really barking up the right tree here, until one of them took us aside and said, you know what, the idea is good. But you guys are consultants, right? Consultants notoriously can't get anything done. And so we said, well, we had both started companies, you know, before. So we went into the next Gap and bought jeans and T-shirts. And from then on, our pitches actually went a lot better.
We should talk about timing. What year was this when you did your first round of fundraising?
So we started ZocDoc in 2007, but we initially funded it ourselves. And we raised our first money in 2008. At the beginning of the Great Recession.
Oh, so your first check came before everything sort of fell apart?
Weeks before.
Oh, wow, that's very fortuitous. And then was that able to sustain you for a relatively good amount of time? Did you have to go back to your venture capitalists and say, we need another check, we'd like to grow? What did you do with the first slug of money?
So we initially raised the money with the idea that we would scale up sales, scale up marketing, and invest pretty aggressively. Then obviously, as the economic climate changed, mm-hmm. we realized that wasn't a viable plan anymore. And we got early on acclimated to being very financially prudent and making very disciplined decisions. There are lots of things that we wanted, but we knew we couldn't afford. And we also knew that ingenuity and creativity has to replace money to some extent. And that's still deep in ZocDoc's DNA today, and I think it's something that has actually turned out to be more valuable than another check would have been.
And so when we think about the product and the evolution, you know, it's been a long time since 2007, 2008. What did you go to market with originally, and who were your customers? Who were you chasing after?
That's a great question. So we actually, before we ever went live, before we wrote a line of code, we extensively tested ZocDoc in Starbucks. Yeah, we would go there with a PowerPoint illustration, say nothing except here, you know, we'll give you a $5 gift card if you tell us what you think the site does and whether you would use it. And so we had a pretty good idea that patients would actually, be drawn into this idea because of how hard it was to find doctors and all the scheduling Tetris you had to typically mm-hmm. play to go see one. I think where we probably took a shortcut was when we thought through the business model on how ZocDoc would work, mm-hmm. right? Initially, we asked doctors to pay us a subscription fee to be on the service. That was kind of the spirit of the times. You know, SaaS models were, mm-hmm. were all the vogue. It also had the enormous benefit that we would get that money up front, so working capital would be a much smaller concern in a challenging economic climate. But it turned out to be the wrong decision, because on ZocDoc, like any other marketplace, there are some doctors that are, you know, winners and some that are win much less. And when the value distribution is mm-hmm. On a power curve and you charge everyone the same amount of money, then any fixed price you pick is going to be wrong.
No, understood. And then who were the early adopters? Was it healthcare systems? Was it, you know, smaller practices? Was there a particular focus, what, you know, GPs or specialties? Who kind of spearheaded the adoption of ZocDoc?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we started out selling to dentists for the simple reason that we wanted to have the highest frequency healthcare encounter there is, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone goes to the dentist 2 times a year. So we thought, well, you know, like nothing else is going to be consumed as frequently. And that actually ended up working rather well. Dentists were easy, relatively easy to sign up. Now, we then had to decide where do we go next. And clearly, the value that we deliver is maybe highest for health systems, right? Mm-hmm. They have the most ancillary services, and they have surgeries attached to that. And so every patient is probably dramatically more valuable to them. But we realized that enterprise sales as the initial vector for a startup to grow is sort of the hill on which many other startups had already died. And so we went literally door to door signing up primary care doctors, dermatologists, ENTs, overall more than 250 specialties. That was very, very, very hard.
And was the system at the time or the platform at the time the same for, you know, a hospital as it was for a general practitioner or a specialist? Or did you customize?
In the first years, we didn't sell to hospitals at all. Now this is a very material part of our business. But, you know, the technical challenge of working with all these different specialties was actually enormous because it turns out there isn't one clear market leader that is working with all different doctor's offices. There are hundreds of different scheduling systems and EHRs that are in use. And if you've seen one, you've seen one. And we had to do the hard and time-consuming work to integrate with every single one of them. And back then when we started, many of them were not designed to be integrated with, leave alone, you know, even be connected to a network. You know, in some cases, we had to emulate human users of these systems to get information in and out.
And that makes leads me to a good question. You know, where the EHR vendors kind of ignoring this facet of the market. You know, I would think the Athenas and Cerners and Epics of the world would kind of have this as part of their suite of products. Was this differentiated from what they were doing?
Yeah, it's highly differentiated because you know, there's a common misconception that ZocDoc is a scheduling solution. Mm-hmm. That's not what we are. Yes, we offer scheduling, but what we is a marketplace for a consumer to see all the different doctors that are available to them. And it's maybe a little bit like kayak.com and Delta Airlines. You know, of course, Delta has its own website and should have that, and there's probably some Delta loyalists that go there first. But the vast majority of people go to Kayak because they want to know all the different connections that you should be making. And therefore, we have seen over time various EHR vendors try to create sort of their own version of ZocDoc and fail pretty miserably.
No, that's a great analogy. I love the Kayak example. So the moat really then is that network effect. Is that what where you would say your biggest differentiator is?
The network effect is key, and being able to sort of have a complete representation of the market with all the different specialties that a consumer would need. Yeah, they need dentists, they need mental health professionals, they need chiropractors, they need orthopedic surgeons and primary care doctors and dermatologists. And if you are specialized in serving just one of these, or say it another way, if you're missing one of those, you know, you won't have a complete marketplace from a consumer perspective.
And we talked about it a little bit before, you know, starting off with the subscription model, but how has that evolved over time to, you know, how does ZocDoc make money today? You know, you started with the subscription model and obviously that's evolved, but what does that look like today and where do you see it going maybe in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the subscription model started to plateau out, you know, and it was clear that because we were delivering a lot of value to some, but much less value to others, you know, the ones that were at the bottom end of that value distribution started to leave the service. And we lost doctors nearly as quickly as we could sign them up. And that was not a sustainable situation. So we had to find a new model. And we spent several years transitioning over to a pay-per-booking model, where a doctor pays us for the first time they get a new patient. Mm-hmm. That ended up being a revelation for the business. It's much easier for the doctors to sign up. They don't have to overcome an additional subscription fee. It's in fact free to join the service, and then they only pay when they actually receive new patients. That has transformed us from a business that had to outbound to doctors and call them and ask them to sign to join the service to a service where the doctors now come to us and in fact put in their own information on the website, including their credit card, and never have to speak to a person. So to give you a sense for how thoroughly that has worked, in 2022 we signed up more doctors than in the first 8 years of our business combined. And on the consumer side, because we now get paid as consumer usage increases, we've been able to market and find that patients flock to the service once they are aware that it exists.
Is that change in 2022, that inflection point, do you think that's driven by the pandemic and changing behaviors on both patients and provider side? Or do you think it was just a natural evolution that was going to occur kind of anyway?
So we did the transition in the business model from 2017 through 2020. The pandemic nearly killed us. That was spring of 2020 was probably the worst time to have transitioned from a flat fee model to a usage-based model, because the CDC told everyone to avoid going to the doctor if you don't absolutely have to. There was a very fraught time for ZocDoc. We had board meetings several times a week and were considering whether we had to sort of lay off workers. Ultimately, I was able to convince the board that we should bet on ourselves. And, by early April, we had added telehealth as a service on the platform, which we had before at a sub 1% sort of penetration. Very quickly, we had more than 10,000 providers on that offered telehealth. By May, we were able to offer them free HIPAA-compliant telehealth software, which is a ongoing service we have for them. And we really recovered very, very quickly and were able to end 2020 with still some growth despite a complete wipeout in Q2. We are just now, as normalcy returns, seeing the full benefits from the business model transition. And so we feel that we actually are still at the very beginning of that journey and will continue to see more of these benefits accrue to us in 2023 and beyond.
It's interesting because you mentioned, sub 1% of visits were virtual, which I think was maybe the industry average prior to the pandemic. Where does that number stand now and for your business, and where do you see that going? I mean, I've seen the McKinsey numbers and estimates that are out there. I've seen a whole host of others. I've put my line in the sand as well, but I'd love to get your perspective, given that you're looking at the live data.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I want to lay out how telehealth actually works on ZocDoc. So we offer doctors that only offer telehealth. We offer doctors that only offer in-person, and we offer doctors that can do both. And so initially, telehealth was less than 1%. It spiked to 40% during the pandemic, and it has come down very significantly across all specialties but mental health. At this point, 5 to 10% of the visits are facilitated through telehealth. So at this point, 5 to 10% of the visits are facilitated through telehealth, except for mental health, where that's going towards 100% and is far north of 90%. And I think that's a reflection of patients kind of realizing that there are beings with a body and that doctors will need to look in their mouth and listen to their heart and poke their abdomen, and they don't want to restart that, when that inevitably happens in the doctor-patient relationship. Now, what's very interesting is that when you look at the win rate of doctors on the marketplace, those that offer both win twice as often as the ones that only offer telehealth, even though the telehealth option is rarely ever used. And so I think for everyone who thought that telehealth was going to replace in-person care and really be what the car was to the horse-drawn buggy, I think the analogy is probably more like telehealth is the e-scooter, right? that we would never use to go to the airport, but we might take it to the convenience store down the road. And for that, it's definitely helpful. It's always good to have an e-scooter at home, even if you end up riding it much less frequently than you thought when you bought it.
And that, spurs a couple questions because I, you know, where I sit as an equity analyst following healthcare services, it seems there's a big push into doing virtual primary care. What's your take on the success of that modality? I mean, I think there's something to be said for, you know, using the tools that are available to us. And like you said, virtual doesn't work for everything. But what are your views on virtual primary care?
So describing just what patients choose on the platform, it is not their first choice. And I'll say telehealth as a primary engagement for a somatic specialty, one that actually treats your body, works in rural communities that don't have access to certain specialists, works as a follow-up, works in rare instances as a triage mechanism, but is simply not what patients choose.
You know, that's a good point around the issues around doctors in rural areas and these chasms or where there's not providers. How does ZocDoc fit in that equation? Because I think you guys have talked in the past about, you know, you are helping to spur some of this more visits in rural areas where there might be doctor shortages or less access, really.
Yeah. So one of the things that we're particularly proud of is that we can shorten time to access, right? So I shared before, when you pick up the phone and start dialing, it takes 26 days till you see even a primary care doctor. You know, on ZocDoc, the typical appointment happens within 24 to 72 hours. Now, and that's because we utilize the last minute cancellations, no-shows, the reschedules. Now, that obviously means the doctor needs to be there at all, right? Like a doctor that doesn't exist can't have cancellations. And so, you know, in rural areas, that is slightly different. And we do see a lot more pickup of telehealth services in these areas, particularly for specialists. What I'll also say is that the old subscription model in many ways was much more successful in dense cities, in the New Yorks, in the Washington D.C.s, and the Chicagos and the San Franciscos of this world. The new model where we only charge doctors as they receive a new patient through us actually works everywhere. And we've seen faster growth and higher absolute growth numbers in places outside the big urban centers for the first time in ZocDoc's history. And so we're very excited to increase the density of providers that we can offer to patients of all stripes in all geographies.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm not surprised that the critical mass in the cities, you know, lends itself well to the platform. You know, as you sit there with your CEO hat on and you think about managing the business, you talked about the growth. I mean, what are the key metrics you look at the business? I mean, I know the model's changed, obviously, so maybe some of those KPIs have changed over the years. But when you think about the day-to-day or maybe your when you go to the board, what are you guys looking at that's most important to growing this business and taking it, you know, to the, I guess, the vision of this new model?
Yeah, so we are very blessed in the fact that, you know, we have a very stable business that, you know, can grow intrinsically without outside capital, you know, at a fast clip. And to some extent, that's because we're a 15-year-old company, but really a three-year-old business. So there's a lot of catch-up growth for us to go through. But, you know, we look at, you know, the patient side and the patient utilization and how well we serve them. And then the provider side of the business. And for us, the provider side is in some ways a leading indicator of what's going to happen on the patient side. It's one of these things where you build it, they will come, and you know, you deliver a good product and a good service around it. So, you know, we're quite proud that the provider side of the network is growing in leaps and bounds and has turned from an outbounding experience to an inbounding one. And we have every reason to believe that that will actually accelerate going forward.
There's so much to unpack there, and it's great because I think about, you know, a couple questions that come to mind is, you know, what are the providers asking for, you know, and maybe the next iteration or the next release? Is there any bells and whistles that they would like to have that you don't have today?
So I think providers in this day and age are obviously also businesses, right? So they need to make sure that they can make ends meet. And in some ways, you know, what's attractive to providers is that, you know, on ZocDoc they find, you know, that young better educated consumer that they like to treat, right? And so that's definitely one of the benefits. You know, we are starting to offer providers more things beyond the marketplace, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk about this later in the year. But the core value proposition for a provider is to be fully utilized when they are ready to provide care, the worst thing we can have is a provider sitting around twiddling their thumbs, because that means someone else can see the doctor when they need to. They go to the emergency room. They cause dramatically higher cost for us as a society, and they have worse outcomes. And so we're facilitating that efficiency for them.
And then as I think about what's happening actually in the provider market, we've seen a lot more vertical integration, the managed care plans, particularly United, for example, buying a number of providers. How does that impact ZocDoc and maybe the future opportunity? Is it an opportunity? Is it a threat? How do you guys think about it?
Yeah, so we have obviously benefited from the secular trend. We serve most of the large private equity roll-up groups, and it turns out that we become very quickly a part of their standard playbook. When they hire a new provider or they acquire a provider, ZocDoc is immediately rolled out because it has such a high, very measurable ROI, and these kind of entities are managed by MBAs, and they just love the predictable risk-free return on ZocDoc. And so I won't lie, we've been really benefiting from this trend, but it's equally important to me to support our health system clients and make sure that there's a diversity of offerings in the marketplace so that patients can find exactly what's right for them.
And when you think about that a little bit further, teasing that out, as patients come into the system more and more, where we've seen this expansion of this urgent care models, whether it's Village MD or City MD, which I guess now are all the same thing soon enough. Does ZocDoc play into that market as well?
So we do have an urgent care offering, and as such, to the extent that consumers prefer that choice, it's there, right? I find that the thing that is important for us as a society to address is the emergency room utilization, because it's so dramatically more expensive than any other venue of care, whether that be urgent care or just your regular primary care visit. And what we found is that patients tell us that the fact that they know they have an appointment tomorrow at 8 a.m. Makes them so much more likely to seek out sort of regular ambulatory care versus sitting in a crowded emergency room with many other sick patients where they might catch something that they didn't have before. So we I think, really help the patient out. We help the ambulatory doctor out, and we end up helping the health system as a whole out and making it more affordable.
As we think about that too, one of the things that has been a topic that we've probably talked about a lot in the healthcare world the last couple of years is social determinants of health and how that plays into the a patient's overall healthcare. And as we think about how you sit, where you sit in the ecosystem, I think of some people who might be in poorer neighborhoods or more rural neighborhoods who might not have as much access to technology. Mm-hmm. Is that a barrier for ZocDoc? Are there things that you can do to overcome some of those issues?
We have actually found that technology isn't necessarily the barrier. Now, it's true that they might not have a laptop or have access to a computer as part of their work, but they tend to have smartphones and can download the app and work. I think what is historically been a bigger problem is that in our old business model, it wasn't as attractive for the doctors that were going to treat them to sign up for us. This has changed, and we have really put a lot of resources behind that change as a company, and have a special initiative around federally qualified healthcare centers that are focused, for example, on the Medicaid population to enable them to join and offer their services. And what we are proud of is that even if you're covered by Medicaid, you can find a doctor on ZocDoc within the next 24 to 72 hours. You don't have to wait for weeks or months, and you don't have to go to the emergency room.
Interesting. We've talked a lot about the evolution of the model from that subscription model to the I don't want to call it fee for service, but it's closer to that. As you think about the unit economics, are there more services that you can wrap around what you're offering providers to maybe generate a higher ROI for both you and them?
Yeah, so we can definitely do more over time. I think that's unquestionably true. There's also more types of services that we can offer on ZocDoc to the consumer over time to really represent the full spectrum of innovation that's happening in the healthcare space. I think what's interesting to me, and some of the advice I've gotten from other folks that have run very very successful platforms, is to not squeeze the last drop of blood out of the system, right? Mm-hmm. Like, leave enough of a win-win out there so that everyone is better off with you existing. And I think that's very much the sort of long-term philosophy that we have driving ZocDoc.
Is there one that comes to mind that you strive or to emulate a platform that's out there?
You know, I think there are a number of really interesting platforms out there. I think what's interesting about ZocDoc is that there isn't a close second, right? Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, that's obviously a specific obligation to make this successful, since no one else is stepping in the breach. And, you know, I believe in many instances that can streamline the experience a lot more for everyone who participates, but it heightens your responsibility to do this well.
No, that makes sense. You know, you mentioned that there wasn't any real competition out there. Do you foresee that being the case in, for the future? I mean, is your primary competition just the narrowly focused EHR that a provider might have, you know, sitting on their servers?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? So we had, you know, waves and waves of competition come and go. It turns out that ZocDoc is more of a duck-like service that looks so calm and easy on the surface, but has like lots of paddling going on under the surface. And so lots of folks had been fooled by the seeming ease of offering the service. So over time, we've seen competitors from the large tech players, from payers, insurance companies, from EHRs that have all tried this and given up on it again. And I think, you know, partially this is because of the enormous investment that goes in this, not so much in money, but in time and attention. And I'll just tell you one story that was really eye-opening for me early on, which is when we started to write these integrations into the scheduling systems, we would still sometimes get notices that that appointment was canceled because the doctor wasn't available. And we looked at, you know, their schedule, you know, through a screen share, and our copy of it in the cloud, it looked identical. And we brought all the smartest people in the company in a room. I brought them pizza. I walked their dogs. They couldn't figure it out. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to sit in this office and see what's going on. And so I'd sit in the office got to know the office manager. He showed me photos of his family and his dog. I fixed his printer. I taught him better strategies to play Minesweeper. And then I still didn't know why these appointments were getting canceled until one day the doctor came out and she said, "Hey, Dave, I'm out next Friday." And then what does Dave, the office manager, do? Does he go into the scheduling system and block out next Friday? Or does he take a post-it note, writes on it, "Doctor out next Friday," and sticks this to his monitor? And when you're, you know, naive to that, then obviously you create a lot of unhappiness on the side of the patient, the doctor, you know, Dave, and then ultimately ZocDoc. But when you know this is happening, math is your friend. And this is one example. There were literally 1,000.1% solutions that we had to find before we could take that show on the road.
That's interesting. One of the things that you mentioned was the entrance of big tech companies kind of into the space. And that's something from where I've sat, we've talked about for the last couple of years. You know, what's Google going to do? What's Amazon going to do? What's Microsoft going to do? You know, as a technologist and the CEO of a healthcare company, you know, who kind of sits in that intersection, what is your view of big tech and healthcare's, you know, ultimate future? I think we've seen a lot of, from my perspective, we've seen a lot of starts and stops, and I think not a lot has stuck to the wall, if you will. But if we look at Amazon, they seem to be getting a little bit more, a little closer than perhaps years past.
So I think one of the big problems when a large company wants to enter a new space is that they're trying to find ways to apply their core competency, right? So if you're an Apple, you want to sell more hardware and you like make the Apple Watch measure all kinds of things. If you're Amazon, you think it's all a logistics problem, right? If it's Google, then it becomes a big data problem. And the thing with healthcare is that the underlying problem is neither of these three things, right? It's fundamentally a problem of completely disconnected systems. And if you think about it, you know, as a patient, right, the place where you see which doctors in network is different from where you find out what your insurance benefits are. It's different from the place where you book this appointment. It's different from the place where you sort of get your clinical information. It's different from the place where you learn how much you need to pay. It's different from the place where you actually pay. And for the doctor, it's the same jungle of bureaucracy. And so if you think about what's happening in other industries, right, where whether it's flights or hotels or e-commerce, right, they all have marketplaces that benefit, you know, the supplier and the consumer by having hundreds of different options that transparently post the prices, and where you just implicitly believe that that the information is going to flow freely between all these participants. And obviously in healthcare, none of that exists. There's not a marketplace where you can see and compare and book services. You know, the prices are typically not transparent, and the health information is locked into, you know, various EHRs. And I think the company that can solve these complexities in healthcare and really sort of introduce market forces in healthcare is going to be a unifier that makes all of these things work together better. And that's not the core competency of any of the players out there. And it is ZocDoc's core competency. So I would think that we get to win this prize if you stay focused.
And that brings up a good point around interoperability, you know, the idea of that your health information goes with you. And I think of the example of maybe seeing a ZocDoc provider one day, you know, Dr. Smith and then Dr. Jones the next day. One of my challenges is making sure that my clinicians all see the same data. And you know, I think the last couple of years we've seen a plethora of point solutions kind of come to market, but that might be maybe changing now. I'd love to get your view on how you see this ultimately working out. Because if I think about my family and you know, the number of doctors and different providers that we see, there is no one place that is capturing all of our health data. It's all up, and I'm pointing at my head right here, but it's all in my mind that I know that we saw, you know, this specialist last week and this specialist this week and this GP. You know, how do you see this all working out with interoperability? And I guess, you know, you're at the nexus of some of that as well.
Yeah, so absolutely. And ZocDoc has proven to be sort of a platform that is the one constant in a world where people need to change their doctor because they change employers and their insurance plans, or, you know, they move from, you know, one place to another during the pandemic and then to a third place. And we can capture all of this information for you. And we have, from day one, sort of made interoperability our core competency, if you want to, even though that word wasn't really en vogue back then. But we did all the hard and slow work to integrate with these EHRs, right? We created sort of clinical information that travels with you from doctor to doctor, so you don't have to fill in these forms again and again. You know, we do have an API available so that others don't have to do all that hard work and sort of lay the last mile out. And so our philosophy has always been one of openness, and so, you know, we think that we can be that integration point for consumers and just create continuity in an otherwise extremely fragmented system.
And, you know, I mentioned the plethora of point solutions that have come to market, whether it's virtual care, whether it's navigators, you name it, whatever buzzword over the last couple of years that got funded. How do you see that kind of shaping up? And I mean, I know you've kind of mentioned that you're not as focused on, you know, selling, let's say, to corporates or benefit or HR managers, but, you know, they're inundated with these point solutions. You know, how do you see that market cleaning itself up? And is that actually a driver for you if more of those things flow into the underlying providers?
Yeah, I think all of these solutions that are in theory great fail because they don't have the last mile, right? And it's one thing to say, I'm going to help your employees to find the right doctor. The other thing is to have that employee on the phone and then try to get a three-way phone call going with the doctor to actually set an appointment for that patient to see them. That's why we have started to open up ZocDoc in a way through an API where these services can sort of use our last mile to really make this work, because we believe that anything in healthcare is only valuable when it's connected to a transaction.
What's an example of one that you've maybe signed up recently?
So we're very proud to work with the Veterans Administration as a subcontractor to WellHive. And as you may be familiar, veterans have to wait a really long time occasionally to be seen in the VA system. And they have a right to see doctors in the private sector. And there's actually, you know, a really material amount of encounters that should be facilitated. But, you know, in their traditional setup, it was very unwieldy to try and and get these appointments set. They now use ZocDoc to do that. And the productivity of their call center reps has skyrocketed as a result.
Oh, that's a great win. You know, as we are kind of coming up near the end of our discussion, you know, one of the things I wanted to think about a little bit more is, you know, as we think about the future of the business, you know, you've been doing this now for, I guess, 15, 16 years. Where's the natural, I guess, exit for the business? I mean, we chatted a little bit in the pre-interview about going to J.P. Morgan. I'm sure you've had some venture capitalists who have been on board for a long time. You know, is the idea to, you know, keep the company private? Is it to do a public market IPO, maybe a merger in the future? You know, where would you like to see the company go since this is your baby?
Well, you know, like, look, when you see your kids grow up, I think you want them to do something really important. I think that's the opportunity that we have with ZocDoc, right? As we introduce market forces, as we create the connective tissue for the system, I think there is, you know, in the order of magnitude of $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion dollars of waste every year in the U.S. healthcare system. If we can help sort of reduce this, I think we'll do a great service for the generation of our children and grandchildren to make that system sustainable. And I'm sure we'll get a finder's fee at ZocDoc that that will make it worth our while. So that's really my goal, and I want to be driving ZocDoc towards that future.
All right. So no comment.
You know, I think there's many, many different ways how companies can be financed. You know, we are in a blessed situation where we don't need outside money to grow at this point. And so we're excited about our future.
And we talked about this a little bit previously before the interview started. I mean, I think you did your last funding round in 2021, correct? You know, which I imagine during the middle of the pandemic must have actually been an interesting time to have those discussions. You know, was that round for the purposes of scaling this third wave, or were you looking to the future and saying, well, we've got more on the horizon?
Yeah, so as we went through the business model transition and went from sort of a prepaid subscription model to a postpaid pay-as-you-use-it model, there were obviously working capital implications for us. And so we wanted to make sure that we have ample room to bridge those. Now that the model has been running in steady state, we are quite satisfied with where we are and continue to improve sort of our core metrics.
You know, as we sit here at the beginning of 2023, there's a lot of economic prognosticators who are you know, maybe calling for a recession or a soft landing. You know, are you in a good position because you did that round of funding in 2021 to weather any sort of downturn? And I guess the corollary to that is, you know, since you're seeing visits in real time, are you seeing any economic impact from some of these headlines that say we might be entering a recession?
Yeah, no, let me say that, obviously a recession can cause sort of human tragedy in some level and can be a traumatic event. You know, but just wearing the ZocDoc CEO hat for a second, over the last 30 years since data is available, recessions have never really changed healthcare consumption patterns in the ambulatory sector. And, you know, for us, it may actually over time sort of change some of the input and demand dynamics in a positive way, right? Like obviously marketing can get cheaper in a recession. We've already begun to see that in our numbers. We see that doctors actually have more demand for ZocDoc because they look at their portfolio that's now worth half of what it used to be and they feel poorer. They want to make that money back and they add a couple of hours of work every week and they want to fill that with patients and that's what we're good for. And I do think that, you know, over time, this may also impact sort of the cost of talent in the long run, even though that's not a change that we have seen yet.
No, that's really interesting. So I think we're going to wrap it up. And one of the ways I like to end these conversations is to ask the speaker, you know, what's some of the best advice you've ever gotten in your business career? And then conversely, what's some of the best pieces of advice you've ever gotten on the personal side of your life? You know, your business hat and your personal hat.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, look, I think advice is always incredibly situational. And, you know, the piece of advice I got that I live by, you know, for a two-sided marketplace is to create more value for all the participants than you take on, so that they are incentivized to sort of prop you up, help you grow, instead of wishing you weren't there. And so that's one of the ways that we grow. And so our providers see incredible ROI on Zuckerberg, and that's by design, right? Patients get everything on the platform for free. That's by design. And on the personal side, you know, I think that's probably more of a values conversation. Mm-hmm. Now, my dad has raised me with this idea that, you know, whatever you do, you've got to make the world around you different. And this is something that really sinks in when you see and experience your dad with paralyzed arms, you know, from day one. And I would say I have this super ego sitting on my shoulder and whispering my ear, you're not sacrificing enough, because obviously my arms and my hands work perfectly well. So I'm very much driven by sort of satisfying the example of my dad, and it's something that will hopefully help me to actually achieve the structural change in healthcare that ZocDoc, I think, can affect. And so, you know, that's something that's always going to be with me.
You know, I got to say, you know, just listening to your story, it's very powerful and moving. And I think your dad would be incredibly proud of what you're doing, because I think you actually are doing that work. And so we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Bloomberg Intelligence Tech Disruptor, Dr. Oliver Karas, of the CEO and founder of ZocDoc. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Great.